This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Danny Wisentowski. About 50 years ago, two bathtubs were pulled out of the ground in Farmington, Missouri. 4 feet long and 120 pounds each, the objects were a mystery covered in thick white paint, yet they still showed the faint outlines of several dancing figures. Some years passed, but Denzel Jennings and his wife Joanne had recently purchased the land and discovered those bathtubs seemingly abandoned. They had them cleaned, revealing another layer of the mystery: gleaming bronze and meticulous metal sculpting. These objects were not from the 1970s and definitely not from Farmington. The Jenningses knew they had found something special, but all they had was a rumor that they'd heard from their new neighbors that these objects were in some way connected to the 1904 World's Fair in St. Louis. Nobody knew exactly how, and others came along to try to solve this mystery. Even the Antiques Roadshow was consulted, and yet a definitive answer stayed elusive. That is, until last month. Rodney Wilson, a history professor at Mineral Area College, has cracked the case and confirmed that these items aren't just from the World's Fair. They're incredible artifacts, and they are not bathtubs at all. The details were revealed in Wilson's article in the spring edition of the Gateway History Review, and he joins us now. Rodney Wilson, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you, Danny.
Rodney, this story starts, like all great stories, in a pawn shop in Park Hills, Missouri. You found these objects by chance. What was your first encounter like? What questions did they raise for you?
It was a small antique store called Raggedy Annie's, Main Street, Park Hills. I went in May 2025 looking for artifacts related to Flat River Junior College, which became Mineral Area College, which is where I teach. I went to the back of the store to a little spot called City's Museum. Items not for sale, just for education about the community, the locality. As I was about to leave, the owner, Gene Fritchie, said to me, "I have two bathtubs here in the front window from the 1904 World's Fair." I looked at them, took a couple of photographs. There was a little note card with the name Gustav Lind, a label bathtub. I was skeptical, also curious. I came home, started immediately doing research with the names that were provided there by Mr. Fritchie at Raggedy Annie's.
Now, could you describe these a bit? And, you know, I know we're building some suspense up here. These are not bathtubs. These are decorative objects that we're going to learn a bit more about how they were used in the World's Fair. But these are just visually incredibly striking, and they almost remind me of something you would see, in a classics museum exhibit. They are bronze. What stood out to you, and why do they not look like really anything else?
Well, everyone said they were bathtubs. From the time Mr. Jennings uncovered them in the summer of 74, approximately, he called them bathtubs. They were called bathtubs when they were restored in 1981 by Irvin's Metalsmiths in Cape Girardeau. Everyone called them that. In fact, that first day there in the window, there were Christmas ornaments that looked like bubbles in one of them, and a yellow rubber ducky and a human figure as though they were submerged taking a bath. They do look like bathtubs, and when you get that idea in your mind, that's what everyone thinks they are. So I was researching, actually, immediately, bathtubs at the St. Louis World's Fair, and that was part of the reason the revelation of the full story was delayed by so long, because they were not bathtubs.
You know, talk to us a bit about this couple, Denzel and Joanne Jennings. They find these items, and, like, as you say, this label of bathtub, or their best guess of what these are, it really sticks. You never met them in person. Talk to us a bit about what you found out about them. Why did they keep these items for decades and decades, really waiting and, you know, allowing them to be found eventually by you?
Denzel Jennings was born in the early 1930s in Kansas. And his wife, Joanne Johnson Jennings, was born in the early 1930s in Oklahoma. They married in Oklahoma in 1950. had several children, moved to this area and purchased that property on the St. Francis River across from the St. Francis Mountains in March of 1973. He was a driller. Mrs. Jennings loved antiques. They ended up at some point purchasing an 1870s home here in Farmington. She had it put on the National Register of Historic Places. She knew that these quote-unquote bathtubs were special. They were important. They had an interesting origin story. There was a mystery around them. She made certain that they were well taken care of. Mrs. Jennings died in 2003. Mr. Jennings died in 2022. So you're right. I never met them.
Yeah, although you met people who knew the Jennings, and you describe, I think, this sort of chain of custody, but also I think the attempts to figure out what these are. They clean the paints off them. Talk to us a bit about, you know, they wind up in this consignment store labeled as bathtubs. How did they get there?
Well, the first of the two, they're twins. The first one was placed in that historic McCormick house next to a wash basin. When that home was sold by Mr. Jennings to Bruce and Melissa Workman, that item conveyed to them. They then had it for 9 years. During that 9-year period, Melissa Workman did research. She reached out to people. She tried to unravel the mystery. She and her husband took them to Trasher Treasure when they were at St. Louis Science Center filming an episode for PBS 9. That proved not effective in terms of uncovering the full mystery. They then sold their tub to Mr. Fritchie in 2021. The next year, Mr. Jennings, now 90 years old, is aware that mortality is at the door. He wants to reunite these two treasures that he uncovered 50 years prior. He knows the Workmans. He works through the Workmans to contact Gene Fritchie, who had already purchased their jardiniere, giving away now what the real word is. And he then sells his, the one he still has, to Mr. Fritchie. So by 2022, both of them are owned by the Fritchies, and both of them are displayed in the window of Raggedy Annie's Antiques in Park Hills.
Now, we're going to get into more, I think, of the details of this investigation, but I think we should relinquish the suspense and let people kind of know a little bit. These are not bathtubs. These are jardiniers. These were actually planters. Talk to us a bit about what these were actually used for. These were decorative, but they had a lot of intention about them.
The exhibits of Germany at the 1904 World's Fair were magnificent. Remember, that's 1,200 acres of space, the west half of Forest Park, and then the eastern third, perhaps, of what we now call Clayton. Hundreds of buildings, including 12 palaces that were superstructures, full of the very best that humanity had been able to create up to that point. And inside one of those palaces, called the Palace of Varied Industries, there was a large German exhibit space. It was designed by Bruno Mohring, an architect in Berlin, the German Court of Honor. These two planters, decorative planters, jardiniers, were in that space. Both of them, one on the left side of an American eagle, the other on the right side of an American eagle. There are three dancing figures on both sides, and these were placed in a niche so that a person could look at them from either side. So they were part of this exquisite, intentional manifestation of the German nation, which, remember, had been unified only since the 1870s, to say, this is what we can do now. This is what we can create. This is the beauty that we can exhibit at this World's Fair.
Yeah, and we're going to talk more about, you know, why these jardiniers, you know, what they were and some of the more information you found about it. But talk to us a bit about this, you know, more broad moment that the entire world came to St. Louis, and there was so many items, so much marketing. Hundreds of thousands of people attended this fair during the year or so that it ran here. Remind us a bit about why did Germany care about what people in St. Louis were experiencing of their empire?
Well, World's Fairs in the modern sense date back to the 1850s, to the Crystal Palace World's Fair in London. throughout the latter part of the 1800s, you continued to see magnificent world's fairs, gathering places where human beings in their various nations around the world would bring the very best their culture and their technology and their art had to offer and put it on display to brag, to reveal, to propagate their ideas, their type of artistry, their type of educational systems. There were schools on the grounds of the World's Fair. Germany had one saying, this is how we teach children. So it was an educational endeavor. I mean, we can't forget the 1893 World's Fair in Chicago. It was huge, but this one was bigger in St. Louis, intentionally so. And Germany had more exhibit space on the World's Fair grounds than any other place, not just in the German house, the Deutsch House, but throughout the entirety of the World's Fair, you had German exhibits in the agriculture building, in the electricity building, in the liberal arts building, in the Palace of Arts that became what is now our St. Louis Art Museum.
Yeah, and what is still amazing and how well documented so much of this was is that when, you know, folks brought these jardiniers, you know, bringing back to our story of investigators, you mentioned that they brought this to experts, even to the Antiques Roadshow, and it was still difficult to try to identify them. Can you talk to us a bit about why that is? Why these stayed unidentified when there's so much written about the World's Fair and so much documentation about those items?
Yes, the Workmans and Mr. Jennings took two of these items up to the America's Center in July 2017 when Antiques Roadshow was in town in St. Louis, filming what became, I believe, three episodes of Antiques Roadshow. Antiques Roadshow was able to put down some breadcrumbs that were important for the final revelation of the story. They were able to determine, for example, that the maker's mark, which is on the lower right-hand corner of all four side panels, that the maker's mark was not an E or a C, but a G, next to a last name, Lind, L-I-N-D. They also were able to determine that that G stood for Gustav, G-U-S-T-A-V. And they were able to say Lind had items on exhibit at the World's Fair. What Antiques Roadshow in 2017 was not able to do was to provide any information about the metal sculptor himself. They were still identifying these as bathtubs, and there was no evidence that they could uncover in that meeting at America Center in July 2017 that these bathtubs or tubs were at the fair. Perhaps part of the block was a block like I had, misidentifying them, looking for tubs, looking for bathtubs. So that might have been part of the reason they weren't able to unravel the fullness of the story back in 2017.
That's right. They left you with some misdirection, but as you said, some breadcrumbs. And we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to follow those breadcrumbs where they led you. And when we continue this conversation, we're going to keep talking about how you solved this World's Fair mystery and the details of the German sculptor at that mystery's heart. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. I'm Danny Wisentowski. Let's return to our conversation about the recent efforts to identify two massive bronze planters from their origin at the 1904 World's Fair in St. Louis and how they sparked a decades-long investigation. I'm here with the historian who cracked the case, Rodney Wilson. He's an instructor of history and political science at the Mineral Area College. Rodney, before the break, we talked about a guy named Gustav Lind, and this was the major break in this case for you as a historian. He made these jardiniers, these things that were initially identified as bathtubs. How did you finally find him? Where was his life story hiding?
There was very little available about him on English language, and even looking at German language Google, I found a Wikipedia entry not even 100 words, no references to these items, nothing about the World's Fair. Eventually, using Ancestry World Explorer, I was able to find his birth record. He was born in 1856 in Vienna. He was the son of a civil servant, Joseph Lind. His mother's name was Magdalena. He had a brother. He had a sister. He was a teacher for about 10 years at a university. Then he opened his shop in 1891, the Gustav Lind Workshop. He died at his home in 1903, January. He was 46 years old, found his death record. He was Catholic. He was single. He was a metal sculptor. And then I started, once I got that information, I was able to do a deeper dive in terms of a Google search, and I found a lot of items that he had made, some of which have survived World War I, Great Depression, World War II, the division of Germany, the division of Berlin, and are still there. People can still look at them. He worked closely with Bruno Mohring, a great architect, the man who designed the German Court of Honor, as mentioned. And in fact, Bruno Mohring designed these jardiniers. Gustav Lind was the metal sculptor who executed the design. He died in 1903, a year before the World's Fair, but his workshop continued to exist under his name. That's how reputable his name was. It continued under that name. I found it all the way until 1962 in Berlin phone books. So for almost 60 years after his death, that name lives on as representation of quality and good work in the metal arts.
There's something really just mind-blowing of the true global nature of this World's Fair. I mean, you had craftspeople from every country who had to spend, you know, months or years of preparation. Some of these objects that were brought to St. Louis were incredible. There's also, and I should point out, this is something we've talked about on the show, is that if you're looking at places like the Philippine Islands, you're also seeing an involvement in the World's Fair that is very dark and is very concerning and hard to even understand looking back. You had, you know, Germany was sending objects of beauty, but America was displaying its recent colonial conquest, as it described it, with displaying the actual people from the Philippines. You know, people who might have been visiting the World's Fair to gaze at German metalwork might also have been looking at, you know, the fruits, so to speak, of colonialism. As a historian, as you're digging through these details, what stands out to you kind of about what the world was preparing for as they were looking at St. Louis in 1904? To tie together someone like Gustav Lind and everything else, how do you make sense of that? Or what grabs you as a historian trying to find a story there?
Well, we humans bring to all our endeavors and all our institutions both sides of our nature, the good and the bad side. You're absolutely right. The 1904 World's Fair in St. Louis had a dark side, an imperialistic side. The Spanish-American War had ended in 1898. This is 6 years later. It's a celebration of the Louisiana Purchase of 1803 that began that great westward expansion, which was not so great for those already living in those western areas, including many people from Mexico and many indigenous native people. So everything human is a mixed bag of motives and outcomes. What this fair did, the 1904 World's Fair, it brought together, I think, the idea of a global human community, the fact that human beings from different natures and cultures and ethnicities and languages can actually gather in one location and not harm each other, but try to promote what each of these different cultures is trying to bring into human domain. And I think it succeeded at that, notwithstanding the negative sides and the dark sides and the imperialistic and the white supremacist sides of this World's Fair.
Yeah. And it's clear, you know, even at the time that people understood that this was not just something they were going to prepare for, but something that was going to be part of history. And that gets to what happened to all of these items and the buildings and these jardiniers. How did they travel from St. Louis to Farmington? In your journal, you got into the kind of cottage industry of the items that were being resold, and the German items had someone in charge of trying to move them out of that palace and seemingly into people's homes. What did you find out about this economy that moved these artifacts and these beautiful items and turned them into people's stuff?
World's fairs were so precious in part because they were temporary, and everyone knew they were temporary. You would not be able to go back 6 months later, a year later, and see the same thing. You were seeing it once. It was a flash of magic. It appeared briefly, then it vanished away. And you're absolutely right that all of these structures were temporary by design. At the end of the World's Fair in St. Louis, the Chicago House Wrecking Company won the bid to come in and dismantle what was left on the fairgrounds. They had done the same in Buffalo and Omaha and Chicago over the last decade at the conclusion of those World's Fairs. And they put together a catalog, even a 400-page catalog, 1906. It looks like a Sears catalog of everything they had procured from those 1,200 acres. You could buy, for example, a toilet with model number WF-108, World's Fair 108. The Germans, however, decided, instead of leaving it to chance, they were going to actually sell all of their items themselves to the extent possible. They put in charge a Mr. Ferdinand Wiederholt. They put him in the Palace of Varied Industries every day. Anyone interested in buying anything in that palace or German exhibits in general could speak to Mr. Wiederholt. He was a German immigrant, lived in St. Louis for many decades, a furniture salesman, in fact. And he did a wonderful job of finding the right home at the right price with the right American patron. And someone, I don't know who, but someone in 1904 had a conversation with Mr. Wiederholt in the Palace of Varied Industries at the German Court of Honor, perhaps standing 2 feet in front of these magnificent items, and they agreed upon a price, and they agreed upon a pickup time. And they went with that person. Then we know for sure in 1975, 74, 73, the Jennings family finds them on this piece of land they had purchased. So you then have a period of 70 years to try to untangle some of the thread.
Where are those breadcrumbs? And you did try to find them. And I think you get into kind of your theory of the most plausible kind of picture of how these items moved. I do want to ask, you know, that catalog you mentioned of the exhibition of the German Empire, those photos were I believe, really important to your investigation. They had the actual photos and the confirmation, the smoking gun, that those jardiniers were at the World's Fair right next to that enormous Prussian eagle. What was it like to find those photos? What was the significance in your search?
It was amazing. You're referencing the descriptive catalog of the German arts and crafts, which Germany had published in 1904 while the fair was ongoing. And to see actually one of these jardiniers and those three dancing figures on the side was astounding, because I was looking for written and photographic evidence across 1,200 acres of fairgrounds that these items were there. So to find it, to see it, and to know this case is now solved, I immediately scanned down into the caption when I saw the photograph, and I read the words, bronze jardiniere. I had never heard of a jardiniere. I had to Google it to look it up. A decorative flower, a pot. That's what it is. That's when the mystery broke. That's when the fever that these were bathtubs subsided and the reality of what they were was true. And then also in that caption, hand-hammered figures in lion's head, Bruno Moring, architect, the next line by Gustav Lind, metal sculptor, Berlin.
That
there's the photographic and the written evidence.
Absolutely. Now, in our last couple of minutes here, I do want to get a sense that there is still some mystery here left, how these objects actually moved from St. Louis to Farmington. Briefly, you have a theory here about actually some people involved in the hotels that were servicing the World's Fair. Tell us a little bit about that connection.
The rumor was that a fancy St. Louis hotel was involved. I started looking then into the people who owned that specific piece of property over the last 100 years. Finally, I settled on William J. King. He was born in St. Louis. His grandfather was an Irish immigrant to St. Louis and a police officer. His father, James M. King, was a police officer in St. Louis. He purchased that same piece of property in 1941. He married a woman named Kay King in 1948. He died in that home in 1957. She lived there another 15 years before she died. They didn't have any children. That's why everything practically in the home and in the lawn conveyed to the Jenningses when they purchased it in 1973.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Rodney, I know you've got a lot more story. People can read more about that in your article, but that is where the Jenningses eventually took over and found those Jardiniers on that property of the Kings. It's plausible, but hope maybe you'll find some more information about it. Rodney Wilson is an instructor of history and political science at Mineral Area College in Park Hills, Missouri. Rodney, thank you.
Thank you so much, Danny.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.